next case in the calendar is 98-171-10, or Associates versus American Healthcare Alliance. Mr. Wright.
Good police report. My name is Greg Wright. My colleague, John Tamako, the artist of Logan Escape.
Was a summary judgment on that, on the issue, was it not?
No.
Why am I saying?
No,
oh, I'm on the later issue, but where there's
the
contrary
problem,
evidence. Was there contrary evidence, though, presented at trial on the issue of wrongful means? You know, we have a qualified privilege, but then if you're exercising that privilege in a way that includes wrongful means, and was that at, I mean, your argument is as a matter of law, but I'm wondering if there was contrary evidence at trial that the means was wrongful.
In addition to the documents, I'm delighted that you asked the question. This is a laundry list of things that we didn't cooperate with them on the move, when we did this and we did that. However, I suggest to the court, and I was going to say this for a moment, take a look at if you don't call me that, I wrote that in 2017. But anyway.
Yeah, a lot of these cases you cite, you were on the other side of. You saw the light.
In any case, the conduct for death in 1297 was surely temple stuff. Surely temple stuff here as compared to what went on in 1297, with all due respect, Your Honor. In any case, at this point, I must make some further comment on the suggestion that our client somehow waived his rights as to qualified privilege, as I stated to you,
the procedure we can straighten out easily from the brief. Let's stay with the qualified privilege and the defamation or the tortious interference. What are the standards for qualified privilege?
They're laid out in the
What is the one with regard to publication? Not under qualified privilege. Only to the group necessary to whom it should be published.
Oh, sure.
Okay, now did you go?
These documents were directed right squarely to Mr. Segula, and a couple of documents went to, we advised some of our former clients that he had stolen, and that he no longer represented the chance. Those are true statements, and I think the pretense is wrong. Now, in closing, I'm going to try to move. I would like the court to take a long look at Kenny, a long look at the Justice President's AD elevator case, which we signed. The opinions of this court go to the very heart of this posture of qualified privilege. That is to say, the right to indulge in terms of communication in the business context. Finally, I would ask the court to take a long look at the case of Andre Cook.
Questions on that, Mr. Clamaco. The first one is, I guess we're all wondering, so what does, so long as it's on the books, mean?
I think when you read and look at the Kruger decision, there is great reasoning there. So long as it's on the book, simply doesn't go far enough. You need to look at Mr. Chandler's testimony.
I get that argument.
By the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
Mr. Chandler indicates, when did it stop? When he lost favor. When did it stop? When we terminated him for cause. Mr. Satua never, ever contested his termination. He acknowledged it, recognized it, and went about his business. He was a disloyal employee who was terminated for cause.
Your argument, as I understand it, is that it must be, for this sort of thing, it must be an express agreement. And to say that on the books, so long as it's on the books, is insufficiently expressed, that's your argument, that that's not sufficiently expressed to commit the parties to a post-termination commission. And to say that is to really say that phrase then, and maybe this is right, but to say that in the agreement that their oral agreement, the phrase, so long as it's on the books, that is actually rendered meaningless in the agreement then. And maybe that's okay, but that you would have to say that, wouldn't you?
Well, I think you could, but I don't have to. But before I finish that, Justice Moore, I meant to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal, and I'm sure I should.
You need to watch the red light, sir.
Kruger decision 50 years ago, 1958, they made it to court at this stage to follow that decision and made it very clear that when you have an oral agreement, especially in a situation like this, all the terms must be agreed to. You cannot just leave something floating out there. There was no testimony at all by Mr. Sapula, and he certainly had the opportunity to so testify as to what he believed on the books meant.
Kruger,
on the books would just be forever. Theoretically, that could have been for Mr. Sapula's lifetime, which would not only be detrimental to our client, but detrimental, and that's why we believe this case has a public interest, detrimental to the public as well, because Mr. Chandler would have been prohibited by being bound to someone which he did not assent to pay a commission on health care services forever. Health care, especially in an industry such as this, when the entire country is attempting to get.
Well, it's only he'd pay a portion, Mr. Camacho. He would pay a portion, wouldn't he, of the sums that he received. That's all. He's paying a commission.
Yeah, but because of the commission in the future, he has to build that commission into his pricing structure every time that particular customer comes in.
Yeah, and he's not servicing the client, and that's one of your
points. He has no obligation whatsoever to serve the client. The full responsibility falls on us. In the full employment area, this court has said, you must be very specific in what the terms of the employment relationship are. And in this particular case, there was not. We believe the Court of Appeals intentionally, with all due respect to the Court of Appeals, avoided Kruger by saying it was not raised. We submit by raising the issue as it was raised, and when you read the specific language of the motion, albeit the trial attorney did not go into specifics, but as the Wiener case says, which we cited, the court was fully aware of all of the facts. This matter has been argued and re-argued. It was raised in summary judgment. It was raised on directed verdict. After the close of the first portion of this case, was raised at the conclusion of the case. The court was well aware that the issue here was there was no mutual assent. I believe under red light, my time is up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. DeMarco.
the statement of your client, what independent corroborating evidence do we have that there was a contract? A contract being a definite agreement between two or more competent parties based upon a legal consideration to do or refrain from doing some lawful thing. How can we prove that?
The way it is, it was proved to the jury in the case, Your Honor, quite simply, was that you indicated first the testimony of Mr. Sakula, that they were then corroborated by the presence of primary health services, still present at that time, you were just recently in Patrick, Mr. William Bailey, who corroborated the fact that after several conversations with Mr. Chandler, he had been told by Mr. Chandler that the contract was to be paid in commission for the gain and loss of the book. Further, the conduct of the parties themselves was to be conforming to that agreement. And if I don't want to agree, if you have another question.
Well, because Chandler then is the key person, isn't it? That's what I thought, and that's why I read his testimony. It seems to me, his deposition, it seems to me that what he's saying is that we agreed to pay, or they agreed to pay, for the business he put on the books. But it doesn't say to continue. I didn't think he said, and to continue for the lifetime of the engagement between the client and the company.
Well, I respectfully disagree. He may not have acknowledged that. He did, however, in response to a question that I put to him, I was specifically, I said, Mr. Chandler, you're not saying, are you, that it wasn't your agreement that you would not be in the full commission as long as it's not open. His response to that was, no, that's not what I'm saying, Your Honor. To say now that they didn't envision a situation where he would unilaterally terminate the ability of Mr. Sakula to receive extensions that he said they would always, that he would always receive. I think by the state is very basically seen that he's relying on the answer. I would beg to differ on the court below said anything or speak more to Bruger. Bruger said basically said unless there's an agreement to the opposite, and there was an agreement.
Is it standard in the industry if I work for Metropolitan Life Insurance and I sell and then I decide to go in and practice law, do I get renewal commissions every year even though I'm not with the company?
Yes. I would say that evidence was also brought out in the case, was brought out by witnesses that still work for Mr. Cameron. And I'd like to say one more thing if I might, Your Honor, about Kruger. Kruger said it is not the intention of the court, and it is a 6-year-old case, that it's not the intention of this or any other court to relieve someone of the improvident contract. It says, however, it must be assumed that the people dealt rationally. And what the evidence in this case shows that it was totally irrational for Mr. Sakula to enter into an agreement with anyone for his book of business, and that is advisable. And there's a lot of evidence in the case that indicates how long it took to establish this book of business. It would have been foolhardy for him to enter into an agreement which would be unilaterally terminated by the other side. So that's why we use the terminology, getting to Justice Cook's question. That's why the terminology was specifically stated, or he denied it, because there's evidence that the jury found replacement. Specifically stated, as long as it's on the book. The measuring stick was not the number of years that he was employed. The measuring stick was not the number of years that he was, quote, in-house broker, unquote. The measuring stick was not even as long as the he chose to recognize him as a broker.
Counsel, under your agreement,
when the commission was stopped at the time that the business was no longer with Chandler. If I may answer the question, and I was so insidious about this meeting as Mr. Wright's partner, the relationship between client and broker are what have to be considered.
that the vet had signed the commissioner's federal paper on the insurance. We don't think we was insured. The fact of the matter is, it was stepping between the relationship of the answer pool with his client, and it did it in the makes it very clear that those clients were not sold as indicated by Mr. Wright. Those were passed. And Mr. Daly and Mr. Chan were both indicated in their letters of dismissal. If any of, and I'm quoting, if any of your clients wish to transfer their business, please advise us and we'll cooperate in that.
Counsel, you referred to your client, Booker's business. Did you bring that Booker's business to this company?
Yes, yes. But he also continued to sell.
So is that principally what you refer to when you refer to his book of business and his part of the client
in the problem? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And now, this is what the driver is right, you know, the issue of whether or not it was the house account was addressed and specifically rejected by Mr. Chandler himself. He said, no, I'm not speaking to Mr. House. He was respected of Orion.
Because following up, I'm interested in terms of just the general proof that you laid out of it. This commission, what did you lay out to the jury in terms of proof of damages, how far out into the future, and would the commission continue under your theory of the contract to inherit the benefits of your client after his death? In other words, would it be safe? My understanding of your interpretation is just how long the corporation was collecting premiums.
Well, I don't think so, Eric. I think what would happen in that speculative situation is that.
Well, that's not speculative. No, not.
I mean, that's in that instance, I totally correct. Yes, we all do. What would happen in that situation is, and we would suppose against the relationship between the partners. Well, what happened is that client would then get another broker. As Mr. Chandler himself said, the commissions are paid until such time as the client sells the team to somebody else. And that was not the case, and that's testimony that's elicited.
Can it be direct business? Why does this business necessarily require an intervener, a broker? Can it be written direct? And in fact, Chandler was writing direct at.
But that is not what is desired by the client, nor is that what I describe on public policy.
And why not?
Well, the reason is that there's competitive rates out there. Mr. Chandler talked about the reason he formed the PTO and the form he did, but most of them were owned by, if you recall, Green Man and Granger. Most of them were owned by physicians. Most of the PTOs initially were physicians. He took great pride in the fact that it was not a surprise. Matter of fact, in that letter, the handwritten notes on the letter to CCI, and you'll notice that it says not position known. In any event, the reason that's important is because it affects the Canon Fox American handhold sort of situation where the rate could be fixed, so to speak, by all the owners of the services themselves. Why it's so important, the public policy that I think must be addressed by this court, is to preserve
Justice Piper asked you in the presentation of damages by Dr. Burke here, how far did he take it out to get the numbers that you got? Quickly, because we got other questions. How many years?
He broke it down from the time that they stopped paying commissions until the date of the trial, what that number was. $600,000 or something. He then reduced it down to present value of $400,000. He then took the amount, and that was terminated. And the jury wanted to know in their question, does that end it forever? The answer is yes. We have all the other ways to answer it. But then he broke down the damages to include also on the court end of it the fair market value of the business that was destroyed by Mr. Chandler's sort of interference. Not but he did write that down between $700,000 and $47,000.
So to the date of trial? Well, it said the tortious interference went well beyond that, I suppose.
Well, yes.
Sure. Did the, there's an argument here about the damages being duplicative, and the, and my question, and it really I needed to ask your learned colleagues here, but the, was there an objection to submitting the damages to the jury in that way?
Absolutely.
Okay. No, I mean to the verdict form, was there an objection to that? If the verdict form did break it down into two.
Yes, the verdict form broke it down after the request of counsel.
Okay.
Why do you not claim, and I know you want to get to the defamation or the alleged defamation thing, and we know about the letter, and why do you not claim on the first issue that he's entitled to the compensation or the commission even beyond the date of trial? It's a lifetime obligation. Then why does the magic thing of the date of a trial cut it off?
I would argue that's how it was presented by the expert. What I argue to the jury, what I feel is the correct case, is whatever they feel is reasonable and necessary to compensate for the damages, taking into account all of the testimony that there was, of course, the testimony that there was included the fact that they were no longer represented.
So, your position is that the damages awarded by the jury end this case if we affirm.
Oh, yes.
So that your client is not entitled to anything else from the defendant. Again, why?
Well, the reason is that he doesn't come along for representing them.
Well, but he wasn't representing them. He wasn't representing them up to the date of the trial either.
They took that ability away from him. They just physically, the defendant, I don't think they brought.
So 3 years from now, they will still have taken it away from him, the ability to represent him. So I just wanted to know why. I mean, my first question to you was, if I work for Metropolitan, do I get it for the life of my, for the life of the renewal, so long as I'm alive? And you said yes.
Well,
and I agree with that.
Okay, I still think that we have to take into account the fact that he's not employed.
That's fine.
I think what I'm trying to say is the answer to the question is, and you ask me why we no longer be entitled to, because the jury said this is the amount that will satisfy you forever. Our feeling is that we're continuing on.
That's why I really want to get to the other issue. All
right.
That's the question on that issue. But I want to come back to the damages that you presented on the contract issue.
You're allowed to make truthful statements. If this is any other thing, we
Well, the point that being argued by the other side is that they have a qualified privilege with a former employee who turns into a competitor. Well, they have a right to compete, don't they? They just may not use wrongful means.
Yes, but there was no compensation. That's what I was trying to say. No compensation.
That was in dispute, though.
No,
I mean, he was acting as a broker. It appeared he was acting as a broker for his own PPO. Wasn't that argued?
It was argued, but there had been no evidence.
They just made it up.
The people came. No, he didn't. It was an unhappy work. He sort of preferred survival organization. Well, when he was asked, what do you mean by preferred provider organization? And the answer was, a company that had access to a network of preferred providers. And that's exactly what it was. There's no written definition anywhere what a preferred provider organization is. And as far as there seemed no competition, the people that came in from PCI down here in Columbus, they came in and said it was clear at that meeting that he was representing one party and one party only. They said they had a question first, because they all said here is WBA and you're saying DHS, but when you realize his letter is, there was no competition. He didn't have it, and Mr. Chandler did it.
Well, do we need competition even? Do we even need that to say that they're, well, to take the side of the of the appellant?
Yeah.
Maybe doesn't even have to be a competitor. Can they say just dissemination of this man no longer is our broker?
If that's all they said, I would say.
Yes. So what more should we be looking at?
Yeah. Where does the letter go over the line?
Well, the letter goes over the line. You want to see their head where he tried to replace their chosen agent with this fellow by the name of Danny Murray. If he is now your agent, he will answer whatever question. I don't think you can tell someone who their agent is and what and the timing is extremely important also.
Well, they can't tell him. They're but the customer could reject that, couldn't
they? No, the customer could not reject that.
Oh.
Okay, for this reason.
Oh.
They had an obligation to render medical services pursuant to their contract with their union. That's what they had. They had contracts where they had managed health care. Now at the 11th hour, they're saying, well, you can continue to use us if you want. However, not if you have.
Yeah.
That there was absolutely no time to make those testifying from the data in court.
But isn't that consistent with their saying to Tafula that you no longer are authorized to write business for our company? They can do that.
Absolutely.
So then the next step then is to take out the timing where the customers are kind of put in a box. But the next step then is to tell the customer, Mrs. Tafula no longer can represent us, but here is somebody, you got it. I was your company, we want to keep your business, and so here's the person you can call, Mr. Murray. So I'm not following what's wrong with that.
I guess I think what's wrong with that is if their desire, I think they have to demonstrate that the interference at all, if you look at restatement 766B, interference, they clearly did incur someone to dismiss. They're not continuing on a relationship with Tafula. They clearly did do that. Now, in order to justify it, they have to show one of the privileges. They're saying three things. We're saying that's not an issue. You can say he's no longer authorized. What else have you got to say to privilege? Well, competition. There was no competition. The reason there's no competition in that business was business they already had. That was business that was referred to them by Tafula to begin with. They weren't competing with anybody for that. They simply said, we'll take it only if you get rid of him, and that's motivated by ill will. That's a motivation that is not honored and is not recognized. That improperly is not recognized.
Even if they believed, if Chandler believed that Tafula was doing something that was against Chandler's interest, the PPO and the CRA, that.
I don't think there's any nexus between the either accept the business or you don't. You didn't want to accept the future business, they had no, I agree with you, they had no reason to accept the business, they had no reason to accept any business from Mr. Tafula. The business you already referred to under the original agreement. And I don't think you could just.
But you never went the next step. When you answered the Chief Justice, you said, yeah, they gave a new agent. They obviously have a right to say he doesn't work here anymore, he's not with us anymore. You say that's fine. They clearly ought to have a right to appoint somebody to service the account. You said, but what Chandler did, is tried to tell them, don't keep doing business. What evidence is that in the letter?
Because the evidence, and it's not just the evidence from the school, but the evidence from Lou Branch, who was the employee of Hammer, is that it's not the way it's done when they're the broker. They're the broker. All matters of renewal go through the broker as being proper. And his own witness testified to that.
Did they ever indicate directly or even indirectly, we want you to quit doing business with him, even if you have to, you have to drop the account and then come back. Anything like that?
Yes. In the letter from Roger Jackson, it was from Tri-County.
Okay.
Yes.
I didn't see that one. What's that say? You know, for your tortious interference claim, there's like four criteria, and you got to meet that criteria that... Okay.
This was a letter that was written by one of the people who were being pressured by Mr. Chandler, and it's a direct response to your question. It says, obviously your company has, this is defensive to that, obviously your company, and PHS, has us pretty much without option. We have about 1 week left before we have a brand new insurance here, and obviously we cannot pay the TPA providers in a week without unbelievable distress and disruption in our agency. So we will succumb to Chandler's demand, but I can only tell you that it appears that Chandler is doing business at the point of a gun. That's his language. And it appears to be unfair business practice. We care not whatsoever about any district or et cetera.
Yeah, I understand now. Thanks.
And what I was going to indicate, and incidentally, it's not the only testimony. There's testimony from Diane Collins,
yeah,
from Tri-County also. And I would point out that
The Secretary's testimony is pretty powerful.
I would like to point out, Your Honor, if I might.
If you do it 15 seconds, you
okay.
One more way.
The proper conduct is to, if they want to transfer their business to another carrier, they're supposed to cooperate with that carrier. He said they were going to do it and they didn't.
Thank you. Right. Marco, you use your time, which may take 30 seconds.
I'm sorry. Very quickly, there is a substantial difference between this type of health insurance and life insurance. When you take a life insurance policy, that is for life. But when you change policy and purchase another life insurance policy, it's another contract. What Mr. Daly says is with the ongoing, as long as the business was there, when you purchase a house insurance contract, automobile insurance, every time it comes up for renewal, it's a new contract, it's a new day. In my opinion, Mr. DeMarco tried great faith. Unfortunately, the trial attorney for Mr. Chandler did not. They picked an artificial date not to speculate out there about it went on forever. But in essence, that's what they are arguing. Every renewal is a new contract. The business that's on the book ends when that period ends. At that time, the customer is free to go anywhere. And you are competing against. What they wanted is for Mr. Chandler to be responsible every time a new contract was entered into. Not just for that one period, whether it be 1 year or 2 years.
I had some trouble following the your double recovery argument. It seems to me that what the jury did was it took the evidence, including the evidence from the experts as to what the damage to the tool was, and whether it based it on tort or contract, it there's one amount that the jury decided he's entitled to as a compensation. Where's the double recovery? I can't follow that.
Well, in our opinion, when we looked at it after the fact and looked at how the verdict forms were presented on the charge, when you look at everything, it looks like the jury did not, in fact, do a separation, also based upon what, in essence, the expert testimony was and what Mr. Cipulla was attempting to recover.
Do you think there's something in the jury forms that indicates that the jury gave damages based on tort and then also gave damages based on contract and that they were the same?
I think, Justice Blair, when you look at everything together, you can come to that conclusion, and that's the conclusion we came to. That's one thing.
15 seconds.
Exhibit N is an October 8, 1993 letter from Mr. Chandler to the Mott Corporation introducing them. Today our focus is to provide you with the best service available in the industry. To that end, Denny Murray, director, has been assigned to your account. In our opinion, it was Mr. Chandler's responsibility to advise his customer, here is who's going to service your account. I thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.